Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to another On Texas Football live stream, the Wednesday edition, the Hump Day edition live stream. We appreciate all you guys joining us, and I am Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers, and I'm joined by two of the hardest working gentlemen in this industry, ladies and gentlemen. We're lucky to have them with us. Got my man CJ Vogel. He's been out on the recruiting trail, blazing the recruiting trail. We'll get into what he's seen and his thoughts. He's been out all day long. I don't even know if he's taking a shower yet. He just kind of jumped in the chair. He probably still smells, but that's okay. That's how dedicated he is. And of course, the man, the myth, the legend, Jerry Hamilton. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Jerry Hamilton is responsible for giving Rod B his first shout out in recruiting. Nobody knew who the hell I was, and Jerry Hamilton discovered Rod Babers. So I'll give him credit for that. He's a man of many talents. What's going on, Jerry? How you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. I'm in the Sunshine State. Got a couple of big stops remaining this week. CJ was on the road there in Central Texas today. I'm going to be in Plantation, Florida tomorrow to see Dia Bell, son of Rajah Bell, one of the top 2026 quarterbacks in the country. It's actually one of the best quarterback years in Florida in recent memory. And Dia Bell's at the top of that list. He's one of two quarterbacks with a Texas offer in 2026. Dia Bell, Troy Hune out of Mission Hills in California there in San Marcos. So I'll be there to see Dia Bell tomorrow. He made a visit to Texas in mid-March, right when spring practice started. Then Friday, I'm going to go see Myron Charles at Port Charlotte, maybe make a stop in Tampa somewhere before heading on home. And I know CJ was out and about and saw two or three Texas coaches get after it today at evaluation.
Yeah, I was down in – I was up at Pflugerville first to begin the day. I saw 2026 tight end Javion Martin, really talented kid. He's a guy that has a big – potential ceiling there. Basketball kid converted over to play football full-time. First time in the weight room for devoted solely to football. So we'll see where his body goes. Of course, the staff there still thinks he'll be able to grow a few more inches. He stands about 6'4 and a half at the moment. So we'll see exactly how high or how tall he can get, but really talented prospect. Father played football at Nebraska as well for a season. Then I went south a little bit down to Bastrop. And, Jerry, you're on top of the 26 quarterbacks. I was able to see a 27 quarterback, Weston Nielsen, who Texas fans should be very familiar with by now. Was on campus April 11th and again for the spring game. Will come back again June 1st for the elite camp. Really talented quarterback. Their staff said that 40 coaches so far have swung by, not only to see him, but to see 2025 Texas Tech defensive back commit, Ramontz Adams, and Tiki Hola, the 2026 interior defensive lineman. Kenny Baker, Terry Joseph, and A.J. Milby are out there. You can see A.J. Milby over there in the orange polo. All three of those coaches brought their own little handheld digital recorder, so they're taking film back to Austin with them, something I don't see many coaches do. Of course, some will have their phone out there filming, but those guys looking like the early 2000 slam dunk competition with the handheld recorders getting their film on. Really interesting stuff.
I was going to say that the team manager wearing the officials shirt never thought he'd get this much run on Texas Football. He was in the video for like a minute and a half, so congrats to him. He's probably a new subscriber after this. Weston Nielsen's watching. Make sure he knows the team manager that was snapping the ball knows he was on the show. But, yeah, I mean, look, Bastrop's had a little resurgence there. And obviously Weston Nielsen, one of the top 27 quarterbacks in the state of Texas. Tiki Hola got Texas offered a while back. I thought that was a great note on Ramontz Adams, CJ, because he played at Smithville. He was at Smithville when he committed to Texas, transferred over to Bastrop. He's got really good quickness, good length, interesting corner prospect. And I know we'll get in this later in the show, but, Texas, I mean, Rod, one of the things in recruiting right now, we have a pretty good feel at quarterback. We have a good feel at running back, offensive line, tight end, D lines coming together as far as the top targets. Linebacker is pretty obvious. DB, CJ, there's been a lot of shuffling, right? It's been just shuffling. Dorian Brew just set up his official visit last night for June 7th through 9th. And then Devin Williams, the Auburn commitment from Buford, Georgia, is coming in June 21st through 23rd. Aiden Anning on the 21st through 23rd. Caleb Chester on the 7th through 9th. Looks like Kobe Sellers will commit to A&M probably on May 11th this Saturday. So that other safety spot around Cade Phillips, who's a top Texas target, and that corner board, I still think is still forming right now for Terry Joseph. So it's really a good note by CJ today that Terry Joseph was out watching Ramon's Adams, because that means Texas is in true evaluation mode at the cornerback position in 2025 still.
And this is a guy that talking about Adams, he just finished in the second place in state for the triple jump up in the UIL state championships a week ago in Austin. Antoine, I wanted to bring this up. That's a good point. Why is Texas not going after Pflugerville Weiss cornerback Jason Stokes? I'm not sure. I was able to see him in action in the wintertime. He actually just picked up an LSU offer. So his recruitment's really starting to heat up at the moment. I know Arizona was on him very early. Right now, I don't believe there will be many schools coming across this Central Texas area that won't stop at Weiss to see him. He's an intriguing prospect as well. And they have a 27 wide receiver there as well. That's really, really talented. He's got an awesome opportunity to make some noise. Those two in the Central Texas area are probably leading the way. And, of course, 2026, I was able to stop by Shoemaker and Colleen and Temple. Brendan Logan at Colleen Shoemaker and, of course, the big Jason Bradford over at Temple. Those two guys in the 26 class. Central Texas got some big time defensive back talent at the moment right now.
Nice. Good stuff, guys.
Well, we'll see if we can get an answer on Stokes here before the end of the show. I think that's a really good question, Antoine. He's one of the fastest rising 25s in Texas.
All right. Good stuff, gentlemen. Get all your questions in. And we'll try to answer as many of them as we can. And thank you guys for those. If you got any super chats, throw them out there. They'll jump to the front. I think interrupt the show at any time you'd like. Yeah. I do want to ask you guys, you guys are talking about, obviously, some of the future potential recruits for Texas in some of these upcoming classes. But I want to talk about the transfer portal a little bit. And, you know, we obviously know Texas just acquired Javion Cole via the transfer portal. That was a big-time get for Texas. We talked about it and broke it down to what it means for that secondary, especially after losing, 10? If you go look at it, but 8 defensive backs basically total in the last two transfer portal cycles. Is there a chance Texas is still targeting any other position in the transfer portal? They lost out on Dominique Williams. We know that. You know, obviously in that recruitment there, and he ended up, you know, going to Oklahoma. Is it possible that Texas is still looking at potentially defensive backs or even defensive tackles in the transfer portal, or do they believe now they have enough pieces on the roster? And how many spots do they have on the roster?
Yeah, no, I think there's, 3 scholarship spots left technically right now, CJ. I don't think Texas is necessarily done. I think they continue to hunt in the defensive line market, as well as taking a look at the defensive back market. And we'll see. I think that would be a little bit of a surprise, but not out of the question that Texas takes 2 DBs. You know, obviously, CJ has been talking about Johnny Bowens. Bowens is interesting because he's not really, to me, an impact player. That would, if Texas moved forward with Bowens and they're more evaluating that situation right now, I don't think he'd be an impact player. Look, if he was going to be a big-time impact player, he wouldn't have left Oregon. I mean, I think that's the reality. His motor ran a little hot and cold in high school. I went to see him at Judson. I think he's a guy that he's been de-recruited. He's gone through the de-recruitment phase, which happens to all these guys. You know, you're recruited, you're told how great you are. Then when you get to college, you're coached up really hard, right? Rod, you probably went through that de-recruitment phase yourself. Yeah. You know what it's about. And it's not a bad thing. It's just part of the process here. But Johnny Bowens, I think if he came in, would be more on continued development for Texas, and that could affect how many guys they take in 2025. Probably not. I think the number's 4 in 2025. But if you decided to take a Johnny Bowens and say we're going to develop this guy for another year, your high school number could move to 3. Not out of the question, not probable, but possible.
No, good stuff there. UT boy, as always, we are very grateful, brother, that you're a part of this community and the family. Yes. Thank you, UT boy. I appreciate that. Yes. Hey, Jay, look at that. Hey, Jerry, just because you're looking good.
That's just humidity. Everything falls in the humidity in Florida.
So you didn't get a haircut then?
No.
All right. I thought Jerry got a haircut too. I'm not going to lie. I thought, hey, well, either way, that means you look good, Jerry. When people think you had a haircut and you don't, that just means you're looking good. That's all that means. All right. So I appreciate that. Man, Jerry. And Jerry ain't going to be on with us for the entire show for very long. So if you got questions for Jerry, you better get him in. in the next 30 minutes or so, all right, while we got some time. But we'll answer as many of them as we can. Even I got a couple of questions for you guys, actually Texas football related, that we'll get into a little bit later on in the show. But here is a question from Mark in Austin. Thank you, Mark in Austin. He says, great show. How do you see the 175 or so interior defensive line snaps sorting? I assume Collins at 40 to 45, that leaves 130. If you're talking about the – this is interesting. I mean, if you're, Texas loves to rotate everybody on defense pretty much, except for last year pretty much everybody except for Jalen Ford rotated. Yep. At some point, right? Am I missing anybody else that didn't rotate? I thought everybody rotated pretty much except for Jalen Ford.
CJ, do you have the numbers last year for Texas on the D line as far as what PFF had for those guys? I don't know. I'm sorry to put you on the spot there. And CJ's our guy that normally has all that stuff. I'd be interested in the breakdown as well on that. Yeah. I think Collins obviously is going to be a 45, 50 snap guy. Ideally, but Texas wants to rotate six guys, Rod. You know that on that interior D line. Yeah. We talk about it all the time. Yep. They will, especially now. Look, you want to try to win every game. Coaches are coaching to perfection, right? But the reality is one loss doesn't end your season or knock you out of the playoffs anymore. So I think you're going to see Texas play even more guys on defense, Rod and CJ, than they did last year. I think they're going to look to develop those younger guys earlier in the season. And if you take a loss, it doesn't knock you out of the playoffs. It doesn't end your season. So I think there's a little bit more liberty with some of these coaching staffs who have really, really high-end teams that they're going to rotate even a little more, especially early in the season on defense.
Yeah, looking at the numbers now, I mean, Texas had about 800 snaps on defense a year ago, and this doesn't account for any of those garbage time situations or where, you know, we certainly saw Texas try to milk a lead and put in some of the guys that were a little bit younger, try to get their feet wet. So I'm not accounting for that. But at that point, Tavondre Sweat led the way. He was at 434 snaps a year ago. That's about 55%. Byron Murphy was actually under 50%, right about 48. So those were your two guys. It goes 434 snaps with Tavondre Sweat, 370 for Byron Murphy, and then it goes down to 300 for Alfred Collins, 300 for Vernon Broughton as well. So that's really where these guys are sitting at the moment. I would anticipate seeing a rise in Vernon Broughton's snap count, Alfred Collins' snap count, and then now to where do Tia Savea and Bill Norton figure into the mix, and how much of a jump do you see from Aaron Bryant and Jarae Bledsoe? That's going to be a bit of a mix and a bit of a question coming into the season, of course, because it looked like Alex January and Sadir Mitchell at least finished the spring on a positive note. You know, you got eight guys right now battling for snaps. Who are your top tier guys going to be? I think it's going to be the first four guys that I mentioned earlier, Tia Savea, Bill Norton, Vernon Broughton, and Alfred Collins. Now it's all about figuring out what that rotation looks like amongst those guys as well. So they're going to have bodies. It's all about finding who of those guys take the next step. Will it be Sadir Mitchell? Alex January is a freshman. We'll see.
Yep, they want to be deep there because they had Trill Carter there in some of those situations too, right? A year or so ago, they had Trill Carter thrown in there. So they want four or five, as Jerry mentioned, as many as six guys that they could rotate, and they probably want even more. And Sarkis said they're going to play a lot of players in the first in non-conference games, basically the first part of the season, before they get into the meat of the schedule. I think that's why they want to figure out exactly who they can trust, as CJ mentioned, who they're going to divide up those snaps between. And I remember talking to Keandre Coburn a couple of years ago and him telling me, he's like, man, actually, I don't play that much. He said, if you break down my snaps during the game, he said, I actually don't end up playing that many snaps. He said, it actually makes me hungrier to, you know, produce and be impactful when I'm in there. He said, I'm fresher as a result. So he actually, as a defensive lineman, he liked the breakdown of the rotation when he was a player. He thought it made him a better defensive tackle to have that rotation, that heavy rotation that Texas has at D-tackle. So good question there, Mark and Austin. We appreciate that. I got a question for you guys. And I was getting into this discussion about this particular topic with a couple of friends of mine. If you're at the breakdown on the roster, and let's take quarterback out of it because that makes it too easy. Okay. Most indispensable players on the roster. Most indispensable, meaning the toughest to replace. That's kind of in my opinion.
Who'd you have?
I went automatically. Kelvin Banks was jumped to top of the list.
Anthony Hill
was in my top three, but you know who was second? And when it was
Andy Muhammad.
Yes.
Andy Muhammad.
Exactly right. He was second. Yep. Three. That was the three. That was my top three. Yep. Just in that order, Jerry.
Yeah, I agree with all three. I don't know if great minds think alike, but two minds think alike here. But look, yes, because with Terrence Brooks leaving, Manny Muhammad's health even that much more important to Texas. And, you know, I think Kelvin Banks, yes, the blindside protector of Quinn Ewers. And he is the guy, if you look at this team next year and you say, who could be a first-team All-American? The first guy you're going to pick over Quinn is Kelvin Banks on this team. Yep. And that doesn't mean both can't, but that people would pick Kelvin Banks as a first-team All-American. And then you have Manny Muhammad because, Rod, and I know you'll break it down better than I, but look, I mean, playing that boundary corner, if Texas plays him in that role, but I think he is a difference maker at corner. And I don't think you can replace him if he gets hurt. I just, especially with Terrence Brooks leaving the program, and I know some people say, well, Texas upgraded with Javion Cole. Maybe. Let's see. I think they did from a speed standpoint and playmaking on the ball. But there's also the experience of playing at Texas in big games. So I think Manny Muhammad's right there and Anthony Hill. Because I think Anthony Hill, he may be the headset guy. He's going to be the guy that they move around. He's a guy that defensive coordinators are going to have to game plan for. So if it was – those were the three I'd pick, CJ. I mean, I think we may all agree on this. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I certainly would say Kelvin Banks. I'd agree with Anthony Hill. Malik came to mind almost immediately. So those three probably at the top. I'm trying to think even more. You know, I think, you know, because Texas is so deep at a number of positions, you know, indispensable might not be the word for the top-end guys because you have some pretty top-end backups behind them. Of course, we've talked about at length what the defensive end room is looking like. I just mentioned eight names on the interior line where we're looking for guys to elevate and separate themselves from the pack. Wide receivers, kind of a hodgepodge of six talented wide receivers at the moment. We know Gunnar Helm and Amari Nyeblack are really starting to battle it out for looks at that tight end spot. So who else, really? If you want to get kind of nitpicky with it, Jaden Blue might be that next guy for me. Just a guy that we've seen time and time again take the ball 60 yards to the house. You know, there, it feels like he's had that home run hit rate a bit higher than some of the guys returning on the roster at the moment. And that's not to say other guys can't get up to that level, but all we've seen throughout his entire career so far are 35-yard touchdowns where he bounces it outside and he uses his speed. We saw a 35-yard touchdown in the spring game on a reception over the middle. Again, I think that's a guy who, if Texas loses – yes, that running back room will still be able to produce, but I think you're losing a bit in terms of what that offense can do explosively. And he's probably that one guy I could say on the offensive side of the ball where, yeah, if he goes down, a bit of that offense disappears immediately.
That's good. I like that, CJ. Oh, you're muted, Jerry.
You want to know who my number four is?
Give it to me.
Andrew Mukuba.
Oh.
And here's why. Because the safety position is upgraded right now. I truly believe Texas would be better at safety. Mukuba, I mean, let's think about this. He's got 142 career tackles. He has played a lot of big-time football games, high-stakes football games, high-pressure football games. And if this safety room is really going to be truly as much improved as I think it can be, I don't know where Rod's at on that.
Mm-hmm.
Mukuba, you can't lose him. I mean, because then you're playing a freshman.
I got one more. And
that room better, and I think it'd be a significant drop-off because of youth behind him. There's a reason Texas went after this guy.
No, I agree. And you lost Jaren Thompson via the transfer portal, who was a starter for you. No, I'm with you, Jerry. I like that, too. I'm with you 100%. All right, CJ, me and you might be thinking the same thing here. Who's your next one? Because it might be the same one I'm thinking. Who is it?
I got to tip my cap to Burnt Orange Horn because it makes all the sense in the world.
I know it does. Give it to me.
It's Jake Majors. Yeah.
Right? Oh.
Connor Robertson played
well. Connor Robertson played well
against OU, though.
That's good.
He did. But at the same time, that's been your guy for 4 years, making the calls, diagnosing fronts. Mm-hmm. Not saying Connor can't do it. I know Connor's a very smart, competitive player. I've covered him since he was, you know, basically a sophomore at Westlake. But there's something about having a veteran point guard in basketball, regardless of how talented your backup is or that guy is that contributes often behind the scenes with that second unit. Something about Jake Majors coming back is a guy that I think certainly elevates that offensive line, just with the cohesiveness with the guys next to him.
Yeah,
that's good. No, you're right. I was not thinking that. See, so
who are you going with?
I was thinking like I was going to throw out Jadae Barron.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Because now I will say this: somebody brought it up that if Malik Muhammad, something happens, knocking on a lot of wood here. that you could just move Jadae out there, and then you could stabilize the cornerback position, but then you can leave a void at. Maybe Gilbo can fill that at the nickelback, the star position. But I'm going to throw Jadae Barron out there just because his versatility. That's why they're letting him get healthy through the spring. They know what he can do. He's earned the trust of the coaches. So I'll throw him out there as maybe the fourth or the fifth guy if we're going to make a top five. But I love your Jake Majors one. That's good. And, Jerry, I like what you – so basically what we're saying is the secondary is hanging by a thread pretty much. What?
Yeah, I mean, look, if safety is going to be a much improved unit, there's two reasons for that. Derek Williams is a year older and starts to look like an NFL draft pick in year two, and Andrew Mukuba is a difference maker.
I agree with that. And I think both of those things are – I feel good about both of those things. I don't like it. I feel good about both of them.
Yeah. I agree with you. The last thing that – but I will say this. I think it's 1A and 1B with Manny Muhammad and Anthony Hill. By the way, I think it's that close.
Ooh, yeah. No, and that's what I'm saying. You can even argue that because, like CJ brought up, even at quarterback, you could quarterback was out of it. We took it out of it because it's in the value of the position can't even be quantified. But it, you know, you do have Arch behind Quinn, and you're really deep there. Arguably one of the deepest, if not the deepest, quarterback room in the country. So, you know, I don't – in terms of how valuable Quinn is, he's really valuable just because the quarterback position is. But at least you have depth there. We're talking about positions where you necessarily don't have the depth. You don't have the proven commodities behind those guys or the talented depth behind those guys. And I think you're right about Anthony Hill, that there's no replacing a guy like that on defense. And Manny Muhammad, there's no replacing that guy either.
Hey, that brings me to this question, guys. Who's the most important newcomer – out of the portal for Texas this year? And I'm going to throw a caveat up at Michigan, where you're trying to make a statement against Michigan. Who's your most important newcomer out of the portal?
That's good.
I'll answer mine first. I'm going Trey Moore.
I was going to head that way as well.
So Trey Moore, none of us said for the guy that Texas couldn't lose. But if he's an 8-9 sack guy, Rod, how much does he change Texas?
No, you're right. Or close to a double-digit sack guy. That'd be unbelievable. It's been a while. Oh, it means, you know, so that's – I mean, that would turn him into a guy that would demand a double team, which would make everybody's job easier across the board. Yep. That's big. I like that. In terms of at Michigan Yeah, you know what? It's interesting because I assume Will, you know, the fabulous corner they got, Will Johnson will. Right. I don't know if he'll shadow, you know, Isaiah Bond, but when he's matched up on Isaiah Bond, I guess the projections would be he'd win more than his fair share. Man, somebody that can make it. Maybe it's Amari Nyblack. Maybe it's because they don't in the Big Ten, the linebackers, they don't have an answer for him really. Yep. Because he could just be kind of a matchup nightmare. Because they do see, I mean, that Michigan defense is going to be good again.
Yeah.
They got the best D tackle. The best D tackle core in all of college football. The best corner in all of college football. You know, maybe it's somebody like that can make the difference. But I like what you said about Trey Moore. I'll just go kind of, you know, off the cuff here since both of you guys agree with Trey Moore. Maybe it's Amari Nyblack. Maybe
I love these questions because I like to see what all the Texas fans have to say. Jason Ary, Ari. D-line guys from Arizona in the Michigan game. It's a pretty good answer.
It is.
Bill Norton. Because Michigan's going to try to choke the clock, Rob. We all know what's coming in that game.
Hardball ball. It's hardball football. We know what that is.
Power. I'm going to be interested to see how that game or how that rotation starts for the defensive tackle spot. You go back to, you know, those two guys at Arizona. Yeah, it was Bill Norton who started every game. Right. But if you watch that Oklahoma game, it's hard to imagine there's anybody more impactful on that defensive line than Tia Savea at the time of that game. And, you go back and you pick moments of different games to watch. And, you know, Bill Norton does he kind of does fit that definition of an anchor. He just it's hard to move him. And he's not a guy at 6'6", 330, 325 that is going to be uber athletic and active in the backfield, whereas I think Tia Savea that fits his athleticism and build a little bit more. It'll be interesting to see if, you know, if they're platoon together, you know, kind of working together on their own line, like a hockey line for the most part. Mm-hmm. If you see Vernon Broughton and Alfred Collins working together, how they mix and match is what I'm trying to say, because I think that's an interesting point. Going back a little bit, they're going to be big pieces of the Texas run defense next year. Obviously, they were at Arizona where they had a top 25 run D as well. But mixing in with this unit, how often are they dispersed next to a Sadir Mitchell? How often are they next to an Aaron Bryant? The top four, how much are they intermingling between themselves with their deployment lines? That'll be interesting to see, and I think we'll get a good idea of that as fall camp comes back around in August.
No, I love that. Do any of those interior D-line prove to be a three-down player, a guy that can stop the run on early downs and rush the passer on passing downs?
No.
That's the question about that'll help. You're right. I don't necessarily – I mean, I don't know right now. That's why I asked the question, because, Jerry, you might be right about that. Right now, I don't think any of them are a three-down player like a Byron
Murphy. Is that when you see Jeray Bledsoe hop in?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's why it's really important what you just brought up, CJ, the mixing and matching and how they do put the pieces together, because depending on the situation, you may want different guys in it, and you only have so many guys that you trust playing that zero technique or playing that nose tackle position. You got to figure
Jerry,
that out.
Jerry, who are your third down interior guys right now? Would it be Jeray and Alfred Collins?
Yeah, Alfred Collins.
Collins for sure.
Yeah.
Jeray, if he keeps coming on. Because I think you would play him over the ball and just tell him to just go get it. Put pressure on the center and the guard. Just get up the field as quickly as you can. And that would kind of open up Alfred Collins a little bit for some favorable matchups, I believe. Those would be the two off the top of my head right now. That's what I was thinking.
Hey, I would also like to see on the record, I've been on the record several times, I would love to see a NASCAR package as well. A couple of times throwing out there when you know a team has to throw it and you do have time to throw it out there, multiple defensive ends because you got so many great edge rushers. Throw it out.
Baron Sorrell in as a three tech.
Come on now. You see, now you're picking up what I'm putting down. Yeah. All right. Alfred Collins, you could be the zero technique there. We'll leave you in there because you're a pass rusher and just throw edges out there, man, everywhere. Come on.
I don't think it's that far fetched, Rod. I mean, we saw Tavondre Sweat line up as a five sometimes a year ago. We saw him on the goal line kind of moving out there, moving back in. It was kind of unique how they were using Tavondre Sweat, who more times than not you would anticipate moving from one A gap to the other A gap. He had a lot of snaps, more snaps than Byron Murphy out at the three. And then even then, they bumped him out to the five or at least had responsibilities as a containment guy at times.
Yeah.
I bet you see some wrinkles with a NASCAR package or at least a way to get some of those big-time playmakers, edge rushers on the field in the middle as well.
I would love that. All right.
And a lot of that, hey, Rod, a lot of that could depend on Michigan's quarterback play as well, what Texas is thinking.
Great
there.
Point. You're right.
I don't know if anybody saw their spring game, but, I mean, I think it's going to be iffy at times for them. It's going to be a lot of RPO-based.
Yeah,
a lot of run. I think they're going to try to run it, condense the clock. I mean, they're not going. I don't think you're going to see many five-step drops.
Unless
Orgy's not the starting quarterback.
I can't wait to see, because Wink Martindale's the defensive coordinator there now with Michigan now too. And man, from the league, he's got a reputation for somebody who likes to get after it. I mean, he wants to blitz. It'll be a nice test for Quinn. It'll be a really nice test for Quinn in terms of NFL scouts who want to see how he handles pressure. Somebody who handles pressure really well is one of our great sponsors, and that's Andy Ludicky. He handles pressures really well, folks, and he can do it for you too. Do you want control over your own destiny? And if you do, then maybe franchise ownership is right for you. If you think that could be the case, then call Andy Ludicky. He's an expert at placing people in the right franchise that fits your strengths and finances. Franchise ownership isn't for everyone, but if you have a desire to take control of your destiny, call Andy or email him at andy@myperfectfranchise.net. That's andy@myperfectfranchise.net. So thank you to Andy Ludicky. We appreciate all of his support. All right, getting back to some of the questions.
One thing, Jason Stokes, the question earlier, hit me back on a message and said he has not heard from Texas or if Texas is going to come out and evaluate him. So we'll see if that changes. A couple of weeks left of the spring evaluation period.
Yeah, I mean, they like long rangy corners. CJ, yeah. You've seen them. CJ, you've seen them up close and personal. Your thought, should Texas be in on this young man?
Yeah, I think if you're going solely off of the length, I think there's enough athleticism there to allow him to play the cornerback spot, especially in the boundary where it depends. First off, if Texas moves from left to right corners from boundary to field, he's a guy that is a bit wiry right now, so he does move well. But when you start adding weight to his frame, we'll see how that kind of changes. He does kind of flip back and forth from safety to cornerback at Pflugerville Weiss at the moment. So we'll see. Of course, he goes up against some really talented wide receivers every day in practice. Of course, Adrian Wilson is one of the top wide receivers in the state of Texas at the moment. And they battle out, duke it out every day in practice so far.
Like that. All right, guys, getting back to some of the questions. Thank you guys for all of the questions. We appreciate it. UT boy, I'll go here first. UT boy is feeling pretty good about his Longhorns.
He is.
Over under on all Americans next year.
Under. Wait, now he may be asking a trick question. Are we talking first, second, and third team?
Let's say that. Let's say it's all teams considered. Let's
still under.
Boy was that was still under. Dangerous. You take under?
Yeah, I take under. If Texas hits that number five, then they're the number one team in the country and may not have lost a game.
Okay, so first of all, let's go through it. So Quinn's got to be in New York, we're assuming, and he is one of the favorites for the Heisman right now. I believe he's tied with Carson Beck for the best odds to win the Heisman. So let's just say Quinn in New York City, that would make him at least one through three, third team All-American. He'd make it somewhere on, right?
Yeah.
Kelvin Banks is, I mean, he might end up being one of those consensus unanimous dudes.
Right.
Like all-time great dudes. So that's two of them. And then after that, then you're making, I think, then there's probably a lot more, stretches. You're going to be hoping that, like CJ, you're hoping some guys have breakout campaigns. Like Isaiah Bond or
Anthony Hill.
There you go.
Malik Muhammad.
Boom. Yeah, exactly. Ethan Burke just breaks out. Like, you're hoping that happens. Other than those two guys, but I think most Longhorn fans are not only hoping, but at least a lot of the national odds makers are also putting those two guys in that category already. Preseason.
Now the crazy thing that happens is we were talking about earlier, if a Trey Moore goes up and has a great game against Michigan, obviously he sets the tone for that. He sets himself up that season. So that early season game, I think, is going to be big for a few guys at Texas. The play well against Michigan and maybe put up a couple of wild plays, right? But also numbers to back it up after that during the season. So are we forgetting Bert Auburn?
Oh, man, I'm glad you brought that up. I literally was thinking until I was like, I wonder if he's a sleeper. Bert Auburn. You're right. He should be. He should be considered.
Yeah.
In that group.
Yeah. What did he have, the most field goal makes and attempts of any kicker in the country a year ago?
Yeah. Now, and that's the double-edged
sword. Here's the deal. If he's an All-American kicker, that's great. But you then run into the same issue with the red zone.
that means the rod zone didn't get any better.
Yeah. No, you're right. No, CJ's right. I don't want Bert Auburn to be an All-American.
I want him to be good. No, don't give him that many opportunities again. Unless they're from 50 plus.
That is that's a great point, CJ. I'm gonna give you that one, no question. All right.
By the way, Rod, if UT boy, if he happens to be right on this prediction, and Colin Simmons is an All-American as a freshman, then he's gonna go down as one of the greatest players Texas has.
Well, a freshman All-American.
Yeah, if he's talking freshman All-American.
He's got a good shot to be a freshman All-American. I think he'll play. I think he'll throw him out there a lot. And, you know, if he ends up getting, I don't know, 4 or 5 sacks as a freshman, they could get him at freshman All-American status right there, right?
If he have if UT boy's talking like first, second, third team All-American, if he was a third team All-American as a freshman, let's say, would be on track to be one of the best players Texas ever had. That's hard to do as a freshman.
And considering how deep they are right now at the edge position, that would mean he battled was able to outcompete those other guys and win the job and be essentially getting starting reps too.
Yeah.
And they're really deep. Ethan Berg, Baron Sorrell, Colin Simmons is going to be a part of that group. But now we throw in Colton Vosick as a part of that group. Trey Moore, we've been talking about. Everybody's really high on him. I mean, you're talking about 5-6 deep. No disrespect, Justice Finkley. I got to throw him in there too.
Yeah.
5-6 deep and at the edge position. Sark's bragging about that group too in the offseason. Sark doesn't brag about groups very often. He's been dropping hints that he believes they're going to be really good on the edges. And I think everybody else is on board with that as well. All right. How about this one? This is from Steven. Steven Joplin. Thank you, Steven. He says, general question, if Texas offers Keelan Russell, do we lose KJ Lacy? Objectively, which one is better for the program? Which one you guys, either one of you guys can take it?
I think there's two answers to that. If Texas says we plan to take two quarterbacks and offers Keelan Russell, I don't think that happens. I only think one of those guys comes. I just don't see Texas getting a two quarterback class of two highly ranked guys like that. I think those days are pretty much over. Even in the NIL day and age, I think that's tough. I mean, because, you know, if you're Keelan Russell, you just visited Ole Miss, you're visiting Alabama, you're visiting Florida, you're committed to SMU. Oregon's trying to get you on campus. I mean, so like you have really, really good options. If you're KJ Lacy and Texas says, hey, you know, we decide we change our minds, we're going to take two quarterbacks in this class. Well, then KJ Lacy's got Auburn and USC and Oregon. And people say USC, yeah, because if Auburn gets Julian Lewis, then USC's in contact with KJ Lacy right now. So I just think it's going to be tough to get two guys. So if they said we want a two quarterback class and offer Keelan Russell, I think they only get one. And in that instance, my bet is it would be the one that was just offered.
Yeah.
Do I know 100%? No. Is that what I think with my years in the business and having been around Saraland a few times? Yes, but we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, if you're going to take two quarterbacks, you got to have a different strategy, right, these days. I guess you got to take your one you believe is the elite guy and one that's secure and then almost take a one that's a sleeper. That's the only other way to do it. If you take two highly recruited guys, two blue chip guys, one of them is going to feel a certain kind of way about it.
Yep, no doubt. I think those days are over. Hey, you're lucky if you have three scholarship quarterbacks nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, you're doing well if you have three scholarship quarterbacks nowadays.
I agree with that. Yeah. Texas is the exception right now, guys. It's what Sark is doing is special. Obviously, the Mannings and – they have a different approach than most quarterbacks would have these days. That's helping Texas. But even when Malik was here, I mean, if you can keep a quarterback long enough, and even before Sark, I'll give it props to Shane Bouchel. If you can keep a quarterback around long enough to just help you stabilize the position so that when you add the new pieces, you can bring them back into the system, into the room, that's as much as you can ask for. And so Malik Murphy, what he gave you that one season, that's as much as you can ask for from a really talented, high-level quarterback that's got a chance to start at other places. That's just the nature of the quarterback position in the NIL world that we live in.
There's no doubt. There's a good question. Somebody's got a good question here. Will Jaden Blue get drafted this year?
He wants to.
He wants to. But I want to say this, and I always say this, can he? Yes. But I want to make sure we're all understand – headed into next year, it's going to be a much deeper running back draft than 24 in the NFL. And here's just some guys from the 2022 class that Jaden Blue was in that were going to be draft eligible this year. Ollie Gordon, 1,700 plus yards. Amarian Hampton, 1,500 yards at Carolina last year. You have both of the guys at Penn State who have had very productive careers to this point. Quinshon Judkins from Ole Miss, now at Ohio State. Jaden Ott was 1,300 yards last year at Cal. I mean, there's a couple other guys, and I'm just saying that to say this. Damian Martinez, who's now going to be at Miami out of Louisville, was a 1,200-yard rusher last year. The class Jaden Blue's in has a lot of future NFL draft picks. And so can Jaden Blue be a draft pick? Sure he can. I think people that are looking at the 24 draft need to look at it a little different in 25. That's Travion Henderson. You have some good upper-class guys too. But that class that Jaden Blue left high school with, that 22 running back class, those guys have been really good in college and very productive players. So there's a lot of competition in the NFL draft at 25 in running back. And as Rod says, their value keeps going down in the draft.
Yep.
So it's 25 draft much more difficult than 24.
Yeah, to your point, he averaged 6.1 yards per carry in 2023. If he were to eclipse 1,000 yards at that pace, it'd be about 165 attempts in 2024. That's 100 more than what he got a year ago. Of course, when you look at both the splits for Jonathan Brooks and CJ Baxter, both of them combined for about 320. So if you see a 50-50 split there with CJ Baxter and Blue both getting about 160, that's your avenue for Blue to reach 1,000. I know it's not an end-all, be-all when it comes to the NFL draft, but that's certainly a milestone that folks like to look at. Of course, the volume of work, the amount of production, and, of course, the highlights and tape on the field will speak for itself then. But there aren't many guys that you see getting drafted. This year, kind of an anomaly because it was a very light year in the NFL draft for the running back position. But you see most of these guys that end up getting drafted, especially early in those day three spots. You don't see them without 1,000 yards by their name whenever those draft profiles are coming up every spring.
Yeah. And by the way, somebody's misunderstanding this in the chat, which tends to happen with this person. We're saying Blue can get drafted. We're not saying, oh, he can't get drafted. What we're saying is the 25 running backs in the draft is much deeper than 24. Yeah. And that's going to affect all those guys looking to go to the league because there's less running backs being drafted high. So that's what we're talking about here. And those guys have a lot of production. Yeah. Now, and Jaden Blue, the one thing for Blue this year that's going to be big for him, I don't even look at it from a statistics standpoint. I look at it, he's never touched the ball more than, 10 times in a game in his career. To me, it's going to be you get to touch it 15, 16 times, be productive all the way through, stay healthy all the way through. Because this is going to be his first time to have a chance to touch the football a lot consistently. So that's going to be big for him this year too, is these guys look for all the warts. That's all they do is look for warts. So everybody knows he's fast. He's a tremendous playmaker in space, right?
Yep.
A lot of really good running backs in the 25 draft expected to be. So what's he going to do to differentiate himself, separate himself with more touches this year? One of those things is handling it all, being healthy, because he hadn't had to do that in college yet. So that's going to be big for him. It's a great opportunity for Jaden Blue.
And I'll say this too, and I said it when Keelan Robinson was drafted, or at least before he was drafted, when the NFL changed their kickoff return rule, now adopt the XFL kickoff return rule, it was going to help those guys. Now, did Jaden Blue has returned kickoffs for Texas before? I don't know. Has he? Has he done that before?
He has, but his issue.
I know it's not his thing, but he's done it before. I would say that they should put him back there if he wants to, because now it's value now in the NFL that teams will look at your skill set now as that is something additive. That, hey man, that's a data point that we actually now covet and that we prioritize. It worked for Keelan Robinson; he was the best kickoff returner in his draft class. That was a big part of why he got drafted. That may be the main damn reason he got drafted. Yeah. If Jaden Blue wants to, you know, increase his draft value as a running back, because obviously we know their draft value overall, the value of the running back position is dropping. Dude, go back there and tell Sark, hey, not every damn game, but situationally, hey, I'd love to. Big games. Yeah. Have you back there. Michigan. Let's go. OU. Let's go. put me back there for some big games and let me make something happen. I think that's a big part of it too.
And that'll be interesting.
As long as he doesn't have a cast on his arm, I'm all for it. Man.
Well, here's the thing too. Who's going to get opportunities with Matthew Golden there?
Oh, how many opportunities could be
Matthew Golden?
You're right. Damn, Matthew Golden. Yeah, he's true.
And Silas Bolden.
No, but Matthew Golden,
we saw Savion Red at times, even with, you know, Keelan Robinson. Teams won't be kicking off against Texas all too often. You know, they'll certainly have more opportunities to kick off than receive kicks. But even then, you know, when games are out of hand, I'm sure you'll see those opportunities kind of come up. You know, it's something to just keep these guys fresh.
Yeah, no, Sark's got a plan for Jaden Blue, though, guys. He does. He even showed that a little bit in the spring game, having him run that Texas route out of the backfield a lot. I mean, he's got a plan for him, and if Sark can showcase him enough, I think the NFL, he's going to get drafted. But, yeah, in terms of how high he gets drafted and in that deep pool of running backs, I think that's the real question. All right, before we get back to it, guys, let me give a shout-out to one of our fantastic sponsors. We're so excited about South Point Dodge being a part of the On Texas football family. And Longhorn fans, if you want to score an easy extra point this season, when you get to the point at South Point Dodge, they can help you get to that point, folks. South Point Dodge has over 600 vehicles in stock, and their award-winning self-staff. They don't play games. They're not about gimmicks. All they are about, their first priority, is to getting straight to the point to get you the best deal possible. So score big today at South Point Dodge. You can go see them on 535 in South Austin or visit southpointdodge.com. That's southpointdodge.com. Get to the point at South Point Dodge. So thank you to the folks over at South Point Dodge for all of their support and them sponsoring the On Texas Football live stream.
And I also wanted to take a second to let everybody know that come support ontexasfootball.com as well. Come be an OTFOG, $20 off annual subscription right now. So just for $39.95, you can be an OTFOG on ontexasfootball.com. Over 1,000 OTFOGs now. Community's growing fast, and we thank you, all you guys, for everything you do for us on Texas Football here at the YouTube channel. And .com. When we're on the road, we could try to bring the interviews, everything we can, the YouTube channel, the news to the .com as well. Can't put it all in one place. So thank you very much to all you guys for the continued support and passing the good word on to all your friends. And I can't thank you enough, but OTFOG, there you go, for just $39.95, $20 off annual subscription.
Amen. Thank you for that, Jerry. Appreciate that message. All right. I know Jerry's getting close to get out of here. Before he goes, let me get this question to him from Botex Knows. He says, hey, CJ and Jerry, any recruits to look out for at C.E. Ellison? My son-in-law will be interviewing for a position on the coaching staff at the end of the week. Oh, good luck.
Does he mean Colleen Ellison? I guess he does. I don't know, CJ, on that. Let me look that up.
Okay.
Let's see. I was just in Killeen. I was at Shoemaker, though, so I didn't stop over to Ellison. I'd have to check as well. I don't know off the top of my head at the moment.
Okay.
He meant Killeen Ellison. We'll take a look at that, Botex Knows. We'll get you an answer on that.
There you go. Botex Knows. Stay tuned. They're always hooking you up. We appreciate the question there, too. All right. This is from Aloha Traveler. Love the question, too, Aloha Traveler. It's a great one. Thank you so much for the super chat. We appreciate that. And like I said, I always wish I was where you are right now. Aloha, fellas. I think Texas has done a lousy job celebrating Tom Landry as a former player. Why has my university done such a poor job acknowledging this man and what he's meant to the sport? Amen. Aloha Traveler. We appreciate that. Yeah, they've done a terrible job of that. I was just actually talking to my friends on the Longhorn Blitz podcast about this. There should be a movie about Tom Landry's life. I don't know why there isn't. Tom Landry's life is amazing. At least it was amazing, I should say. It was unbelievable. Because, and I'll make sure I get this factoid right. When he was at the university initially, he left university to go serve in the Army Air Corps, the U.S. Air Corps. And while he was there, from 1944 to 1945. All right, from November of 44 to April of 45, he completed a combat tour of 30 missions and survived a crash landing in Belgium after his bomber ran out of fuel. Then went back to UT and returned to his studies, and then played fullback and DB and helped Texas, you know, win a lot of games and bowl games, and then went on to be Tom Landry that everybody knows as the iconic Tom Landry, is one of the GOATs in NFL history. So it's, I don't know why that Texas doesn't celebrate it more. I have no idea. I do think they have like, they have like a tribute to him on campus, but it's not something that's publicized or talked about. So there's a tribute there on campus. I know that for a fact, because I had people tell me that when we've had this discussion before, but it's just not publicized or promoted enough. So I don't know. It has done a poor job. I agree with you a lot, Trevor. I agree with that.
Yeah, for a long time, you know, obviously growing up in the Dallas area, you hear about Tom Landry, Cowboys, you know, Ring of Honor, legendary coach. It took me until I was about 15 to realize he had ties even to Texas. So I didn't know at all until, I mean, I'm with you. It's not really celebrated or marketed all too much that you would expect. So it's a good question.
I have no idea.
Two coaches wore hats on the sideline that are always memorable. Tom Landry and you know who at Alabama. So, I mean, that Bear Bryant. I mean, that's the one thing outside of what everybody was just talking about. The one thing that's always stuck with me is you always knew who those guys were because of the hats they wore on the sidelines. Kind of crazy. How many college game days do y'all think Texas has this year? That's a great question. Well, Michigan will be a big noon for Fox, right?
Yeah, does that count?
I mean, that's a good question.
Well, I guess that's the only game that they'll be eligible for, no?
Yeah, yeah. Texas-Georgia will be if they're both looking really good. You know, maybe one's undefeated and one has one loss, which whoever that is. I think you'll see game day in Austin for that one. Depending on what A&M looks like and where Texas is at in the playoff picture at the end of the year at A&M, I would suspect game day will be there because they're going to want to pump up that rivalry that has been missing for 12 years now and pump that up through the SEC and what's to come in the future of the SEC. So I'll say at least two. You never know with the Red River where things are at in that one.
Yep, good point.
I wish A&M is at least – I wish they're respectable enough that they're at least consider the Texas A&M rivalry, because I know they want to promote it and pump it up. And that game is even if A&M's not great, I still think that's going to be a hell of a game, an atmosphere, I should say. Man, I don't know. Hopefully it's not a hell of a game. Hopefully Texas beat the hell out of them. But I think the atmosphere is going to be electric, even down there in Aggieland, guys. It's going to be wild, man. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be crazy.
Chris Bennett's right. There have been big noon and game day at the same games. It would not shock me if ESPN put game day at Michigan, because that's the national champions, the defending national champions with Steve Sarkisian in Texas, who were in the playoff last year, and Quinn and everybody, a lot of guys back. Texas at Michigan, I bet has both. I bet it has Fox and game day there. Especially if you look at the college schedule that weekend, I bet both are there.
Yeah,
it's going to be a big blowout.
Yep, CB says
that's a good question to ask, is what's the level in which you hope for A&M to succeed in 2024, in which that game at the end of the year warrants a college game day appearance? You know, do you want them to go 9 or 10 wins potentially by that game so that game gets all the coverage? Or do you say, screw the game day coming in, I want them at 4 or 5 wins and that season to be a disaster?
Honestly, I don't want that, because they'd be more dangerous at 4 or 5 wins. I want Texas to respect them a little bit going in there, man. Yeah. That could be dangerous.
All right, so 6 or 7.
Yeah.
Both eligible.
I'll say this. A&M could be 2-9, and they're going to be rabid for that game.
Next year.
But I'll say this. I'll say this as well, Rod. I don't know if you heard, but Brett Robin came on with us Tuesday morning.
Oh, love me some Brett Robin. That's my dog, man.
Okay, I have a question for you, Rod. You played in the game, and he was saying when they were backed up in the south end zone, or is it the north end zone at A&M? I can't remember. They just built the new end zone. And Brett was like, I was here to hear from Chris Sims, and I could not hear what he was saying.
Duh. Yeah.
So my question to you is, how much is the headset going to help a quarterback in an environment like that? Yep. Not maybe not the communication to the players, but how much will that help the quarterback to at least have a headset in the two or three road games that can be viciously loud?
Yeah, it's gonna be a tremendous help. It really is. I mean, and for some guys, it'll help more so than others. But you know, just to keep the quarterback calm, just to logistically, so I can hear the play, and then I can communicate it to the other guys. Whether that be whether you end up with wrist communication because they can't hear you, but at least a quarterback, you can get the play in, and the coach can give you notes about, hey, what's, you know, what to expect, those sort of things. So I'm with you. I think it's a tremendous help in environments like A&M. That's going to be a hostile environment, man. You really can't hear anything like next to you. It's going to be that wild and that crazy. And the damn stands going to be moving. It's freaky, man, that down there in Aggie Land. When you look up and you start seeing the stands rocking, I don't know. I mean, they're engineers, so they did it. They made sure that it was stable enough. But it is some freaky stuff, and that's a ruckus home environment. But Texas is getting there too. Remember, Will Anderson said that, yep, you know, coming to Texas, that was one of the loudest and one of the most intimidating environments that you ever played.
11 a.m.
Yeah.
So I don't know if y'all were in the stands. I was in the stands for that one, and that was the loudest. Maybe I wasn't at the Notre Dame game when the 18-wheeler package won that overtime game, but that Alabama game was as loud as I've heard it.
Yeah. Indeed. Yeah, they better get ready, man. That's SEC. That's the SEC culture. Get ready, because you got to make sure that you can at least give your team some type of home field advantage. Guys, this is a good question here. And Jason Airy, I hope I got the name right. I apologize if I didn't, Jason. But Jason says, it'll be interesting to see who Quinn Ewers go-to guy will be in the clutch. He said wide receiver. He assumes it's going to be a wide receiver. I guess it could be one of the tight ends to be a go-to guy, maybe in the clutch, maybe your money downs in the red zone, clutch time. If you had to throw it out there, who the go-to wide receiver is going to be. And CG, I know you've done some research on this wide receiver room. And who do you think is going to be potentially the go-to guy for Quinn, who he'll like more than the other guys in clutch time situations, money down situations?
Yeah, we had this conversation a bit last night, Rod, with Aaron. And, you know, I had a coach who was at a practice not too long ago toward the back half of spring ball tell me, you know, the most impressive looking wide receiver that was most, one, consistent, and two, it looked like they were trying to get him involved very often in practice was actually Matthew Golden. I think that you'll see a lot of him because I think what he does doesn't warrant kind of those niche plays. You know, he's a guy that moves inside and outside. We saw him do that during the spring. He's also a guy that works underneath while still having enough in the tank to run the corners, to run the post, to get by a defender, wherever he is on the field. But again, you go back to his time at Houston, he was a guy that averaged only about 8 yards per target down the field. He did a lot of the underneath route. He looks to me like a guy that could fill in for that Jordan Whittington role in 2024, in which we saw Jordan Whittington kind of be that default wide receiver. I'm not talking pass catchers because I do think Gunnar Helm is going to have a big year in the passing game, and I think Mari Niblack will provide the safety cushion there. But in terms of what you'll see from the wide receiving spot, I think he's a little bit more complete. He has experience. He's played about – he has about 70 receptions under his belt at Houston. He's played in some big games. He had a big game against Texas, 2 touchdowns and 89 yards as well. So – I think that's the guy. I think Isaiah Bond's just a little bit too niche in his approach at the wide receiver spot at the moment. But we'll see, of course, because Jonte Cook's going to figure into the rotation. Ryan Wingo, going to be hard to keep him off the field as well. Who else kind of emerges right now? I have to imagine that one's going to be a constant guy that you see on the field to begin and carry on into the season.
Yes, 88 is great. I'll also say this. I mean, I'm interested to see as a route runner, a guy that's very dependable within the route running is DeAndre Moore. I'll be interested to see where his kind of role plays out. By the way, I'm 4th and 31. It's Isaiah Bond. Let's get that one. Okay, we got to get that one. Easy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's still one of the most unbelievable plays I've seen in college football. I don't know how Auburn let that happen. But, you know, I think it should be Bond. but we'll see how things play out. I think Jonte Cook, tremendous route runner. Guys that work with margin hooks know what they're doing. They understand coverage. And I thought Jonte had one of the better catches I've seen him make personally. Was the catch against when Manny Muhammad had great coverage in the spring
game. It was a good one.
That's a catch. That's a reception in a meaningless spring game that gives Quinn Ewers confidence next season in Jonte Cook. That catch will have meaning next year on a couple of three third downs, and you can link it right back to the catch that he made against great coverage in the spring game.
Honestly, my concern with Isaiah Bond, Jerry, is the contested catches. That mm-hmm. didn't show up in the spring game.
He's always been inconsistent in that way. Yeah.
Then that's my hesitancy for him not being that go-to guy.
Yeah.
I think
Sark's going to give him the first shot. Let's say that.
Fair.
It's up to him. It's up to him. Go grab it.
That's fair. Yep.
And can I just say, Jerry, that play you brought up in the spring game might be my favorite play in the spring game. It was in terms of the competition level and everything you had, I believe it was a third down, was it not? It was third down, and it was Manny Muhammad made a speed turn, and it was great coverage, but a speed turn to put himself still on the upfield shoulder, but able to contest the catch. And then Jonte Cook made a hell of a catch and a hell of a throw by Quinn. I mean, that was an NFL throw, put it right where he needed to. Only his guy could get it. That was one of my favorite plays in the spring game. It really was. That was a nice it was great competition all around by the quarterback, by the wide receiver, by the DB. I remember that play stands out in my mind. There you go. Let me get to this by Ski Breck. Ski Breck, thank you very much. How's that baby rod be? She crawling yet? She is not crawling. She's scooching. She's scooching. Uh-huh. And yeah, so she's scooching when she's motivated for something, whether it be my phone she's always reaching out for, which she can never get to, or some toy. She's scooching. So she's 7 months now, and I believe this is about the time we can get a crawl. But she's doing well, man. She's strong. She's motivated, I think, to crawl, but she right now she hadn't done it yet. So dad's got to work with her. Mom takes it easy on her too much. I'm trying to get her to work. We get practice sessions in during the day, me and her.
Get the phones out.
Dude, my wife's like, why are you talking to her like that? I'm like, hold on, I'm just motivating her.
Hey, speaking of, we're staying on the rod topic. This is my last question that I got to get out of here. Well, Jerry, what did Rod do to catch your eye when you discovered him? Rod jokes about that. I didn't discover him. But I'll say this. And this isn't because Rod and I are friends, have known each other for a long time. Rod naturally, there are some guys naturally that can just stick to receivers. An ability to read guys, however Rod read guys. I always say he rolled out of bed and ran 4.4, and that's true. But it's the quickness more than the speed, but the ability to just stay attached. And people are like, well, that's what their job is. Yeah, well, some people suck at it. Rod was very, very good at staying attached. I mean, and so – look, some people say, well, Rod wasn't that tall. He was attached. Rod was always attached to guys. And to me, that's the number one thing. It's like accuracy with a quarterback, Rod. Who can naturally – Manny Muhammad plays in phase, is always attached.
Yes.
And you were always attached. Why was that? Was it just – do you even know why you were that way as a kid?
I know why. Because, first of all, I thought of myself as a technician in man coverage. Yeah, so I really did. And Manny Muhammad's like this too. I studied the position and studied how to play it and different techniques. That's what I like about Santana Wilson's game. He's also one of those guys. I talked to him about different types of press coverage, different types of technique at the line of scrimmage. That's one thing. So I enjoyed it and took pride in my press man. And body language. I heard Sauce Gardner say it. It's so true. Body language doesn't whisper, it screams.
Yes,
there are certain things you can watch on certain receivers, and it'll tell you exactly the way their body moves, exactly where they want to, how they want to set you up, and where they want to cut. And usually it's related to the hips. So once you got sticky on the receiver, you're right about that, Jerry. I tried to stay close to him, because if I got close to him, then it wouldn't allow him to make a clean break. And then he couldn't set me up. Receivers want to set you up. They want to get your hips turned one way and then go the other way. They want to set it. I never gave him a chance. I tried not to give him a chance to set me up. Get close to him quickly. Even when I'm playing off, if you got that cushion, don't be patient in your retreat so that you can close that cushion on that receiver and you can get close to him. And some DBs, that makes them uncomfortable. Never made me uncomfortable because I can run. I can run with you.
You knew you could make up too.
I knew I could run with him. Yeah, that's probably what it was.
It helps to have makeup speed, does it not?
Amen, brother. Amen.
If you don't have makeup speed, it's amazing how your mindset changes at that position.
Yes, it does. I agree with that, brother. Yes. And I've been there. Going up against guys like Xavier Worthy will make you feel slow. I went up against Steve Smith before in the league, and you know what? I felt slow. I was like, I feel slow going up against this guy. Some guys make you feel like that, Jerry. All right, Jay, I know you got to get out of here, brother, so thank you for the time. We appreciate it. We're getting ready to wrap it up soon, too.
See y'all in the morning on Coffee and Football.
All right, thank you, Jerry. That's my man, Jerry Hamilton. Sure. Does a great job. And we got a couple of minutes here left, so we'll answer a few more questions before we get out of here. And then CJ and I will wrap it up as well. I like that, CB. Yeah, Jerry won't take credit for it, but he was the first one that gave you more surprise. I played with my man, Jerome Sapp, who was an All-American as a junior in high school. Amazing player, played for the Ravens, played for Notre Dame. He was awesome. And so he blew up. And I think most people that discovered me saw me watching him. And that's why I didn't get a lot of offers until late. My man, Jerry Hamilton, put me up on some recruiting rankings back in the day. And then Tim Brewster, man, came to see you, boy, one game. And I had a two interception game. I had caught a touchdown. I returned to pick for a touchdown. And Brew was there. And Brew was like, hey, we got to have you at Texas, man. And that was it pretty much from then on. All right. So thank you, CB, for the walk down memory lane. We appreciate that. Nathan wants to know, and I like this, how much can a sixth-year guy like Bill Norton improve? I don't know. Do we want him to improve or do we just want him to be what he was at Arizona? Now, if he improves, that's found money. But what they really want is a guy they've already seen on film, right, TJ, play the nose if needed to and be a consistent run stopper. If he proves to be a guy that can be a three-down player for you, that'd be great. But I don't know if you necessarily need that from him, right?
Right. I think you went out, if you're Texas, and you added a guy that you know can come in and help you stop the run. Anchor that defensive line position and not allow teams to run rampant all over your defense. That's what Bill Norton can do. 6'6", 325, kind of in that 330 range as well. He plays big, and that's not, you know, I want to say this in a way because he doesn't play very active. He's not in the backfield making the tackles for loss, but he chews up a lot of space. And again, for what you're looking at in that interior defensive line spot, replacing T'Vondre Sweat, Terrell Carter, and Byron Murphy, that's what you need. You need guys to go in there and not allow running lanes to open up. You need guys to walk in there and eat up double teams, not allow pulling guards to get to where they got to be. And I think Bill Norton provides that. Stat sheet's not going to be uber impressive. It wasn't necessarily that impressive at Arizona, but he is very effective. He started 11 or 12 games last year for a top 15 running defense because of what he was able to do. And that's eat up a lot of space on the interior.
Yep. No, I totally agree with you. And I think that if he adds the pass rushing element on passing downs, that'd be great. But I expect Texas to money ball that D tackle position situationally. And when they get teams at, you know, down in games or at a deficit, when they can put in more of their perennial pass rushers, they'll do that. But Bill Norton early on, I think he's going to be a guy for you, especially I like that the person in the chat said in that Michigan game. That's when you really want to see those Arizona D tackles really show you their worth. Good stuff there. One more other question here. Oh, hey, Justin, thank you very much for the super chat. Thank you very much, Justin. We appreciate that. Justin wants to know, with the program having success, how often will guys be recruited over? Don't remember that happening often under Herman. CJ, yeah, what are your thoughts about that? I mean, this is a first world problem, right, if Texas is having this issue.
Oh, it didn't happen under Herman because you were always playing freshmen because the juniors and the seniors were transferring, right? Like you didn't necessarily see all those big time recruiting classes pan out at Texas because none of them really stayed to finish their careers at Texas, or if they had an opportunity to depart for the NFL, how often did you see guys with a draftable grade return to Texas to improve on that? I think at that point, a lot of guys just wanted to get out. You know, whatever the situation was at Texas under Tom Herman, a lot of guys just didn't want to be at Texas any further than they had to be. That's not the case anymore. You've seen it this year, Jahdae Barron, Alfred Collins return. Of course, there's a lot of guys on the interior. You know, Jake Majors, another guy who probably had an opportunity to go play professional football this past year, returns for to be the older guy in the room. It's a bit different now. So, yes, you're going to see Texas continue to have those four, five-star level guys continue in. But we saw it this year. You know, guys did get recruited over. Guys couldn't scratch the two deep despite being on campus for 3 or 4 years. And that's when you see departures. Will it be a continual thing? I think to an extent, maybe not so much this year, because this was the first real offseason in which Texas looked at its roster and said, okay, now they're all my guys. If you're Steve Sarkisian, now I know what I'm working with, rather than dealing at a deficit and looking in the roster, you know, management department and saying, we've got to go get defensive linemen, wide receivers, whatever. That's because guys are going to the league. Not so much that these guys aren't capable of playing big time ball in the SEC.
Yep. Yeah. That's it. You want that positive kind of attrition where guys are leaving your program because they don't have a path to play and you've upgraded at that position. And ultimately they go contribute and start other programs. That'd be great. Texas keeps winning. Or you have a pipeline to the NFL and you're losing guys to the NFL because multiple guys are getting drafted at that position, like wide receiver this past year, a D tackle this past year. And you got multiple ways to really fill those voids, transfer portal and recruiting and developing as well. All right, before we get out of here, let's thank one of our fantastic sponsors. We appreciate Andy Ludeke and all of his support. If you're stuck in the corporate rat race with a 2 weeks PTO and no control over the money you can make or your schedule in general, call Andy. He will take you through a process to help you find a business that will fit your skill sets and financial goals. Franchise ownership isn't for everyone, but if you have a desire to take control of your financial destiny, call Andy or email him at andy@myperfectfranchise.net. That's andy@myperfectfranchise.net. We appreciate Andy Ludeke and all of his support, especially sponsoring the Wednesday night live stream here. All right, let's answer the last question here, then we'll call it a night. Travis wants to know, is Texas scouting Johnny Bowen? If so, what does he bring technique-wise, CJ?
Yeah, they're kind of in the market of feeling out, you know, kind of getting an idea of what Johnny Bowen can bring to the table. Johnny told me last night that he is hoping to visit Texas at some point. Of course, he is still at Oregon. He entered the transfer portal. But for anybody familiar with the schools up in the Pacific Northwest, they're on a bit of a different semester timeline. So he'll remain in Oregon up until, I believe, the first or second week of June, in which he'll finally come back down to Judson, where he graduated from high school. Around then is when I think you'll start seeing Texas get involved a little bit heavier. Texas, again, this isn't a guy that I'm expecting to come in and contribute and give you snaps right away. But if you look beyond 2024 at the defensive line position, Texas is going to need bodies in that room, because you could look at four guys right now expected to depart. With Tia Savea, Bill Norton, Alfred Collins, and Vernon Broughton, it's very likely that Texas walks into 2025 with none of those guys returning. And now you're in a similar spot next cycle, looking at it like, yeah, we got to have guys in this room to continue the depth, continue the development. Texas finished in the top three for his recruitment out of high school. He's a true three. I think you can play him at the one at times. He's only about 300 pounds, so you're going to need to see that body develop a little bit more. But he's got a good motor. I'd like to see it a little bit more consistently. And, of course, he came from a good district as well. So he played good quality talent up at Oregon as well. We'll see just how active Texas gets with him a couple weeks from now.
Yeah, every year I think it changes in terms of now with the transfer portal and traditional recruiting, you know, the sense of urgency you have, whether it's a short-term solution or a long-term solution with certain positions. Like, I got to hit the transfer portal right now because we need help today. So that's a short-term solution for certain positions, maybe like D tackle for Texas. But I think at D tackle and maybe some other positions too, you need both a long-term solution and a short-term solution. Because you at D tackle, there's just no telling when you're going to end up kind of bereft of talent at that position. Hell, quarterback may be the same way too. Maybe some of those premium positions. All right. Thank you, CJ, for all that you do, brother, and all your hard work, man. I know you've been out on the road. So we appreciate you joining us on the live stream today, brother. Any last words for the people out there or any shout out about what you're doing tomorrow for the folks out there? Are you going to be on the road or are you getting a chance to stay at home today? You've been on the road for the last couple of days, I know.
Yeah, headed up to Dallas. Going to go see Waxahachie in the afternoon. They have a couple 2027 kids that are really starting to pick up some steam and a quarterback that I think just picked up a Purdue and Texas Tech offer. Texas actually stopped by on Tuesday. So we'll get to see just what's going on there. Texas coaches will continue to be on the road as well. A couple of them headed down to Houston tomorrow for the rest of the week. And, of course, I mean, Mother's Day coming up, so can't wait to go spend some time at home, Rod.
Yay, no doubt, no doubt. Well, if I don't talk to you, brother, have a great weekend. Be safe on that road, and happy Mother's Day to your mom and to your family as well. And also, we'll be tomorrow. Don't forget, folks, we'll have another a live stream, of course. We'll be on tomorrow. We'll have a winning drive tomorrow. We'll be live, of course, with my man CJ Vogel. We'll be on there with Coach Shipley, 4:15 to around 5:30. We'll be on then as well. So for my man Matthew behind the scenes, we're doing a great job. We appreciate him. He always does a great job for us. And for all you out there, yes, Botex, thank you, man. Take care. Thank you guys for joining us. We appreciate you helping us build this Longhorn community. For our friends at South Point Dodge, for Andy Ludicky as well, for my man Jerry Hamilton, for the On Texas football family. Until next time, hook 'em.
Welcome.